good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
And yes, thank you to the lady on the laptop. And you have any of you heard the proverb nowadays? With everything that's going on in the Middle East and the world, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. I think most people have heard that one. Now that is an Arab proverb, and I won't say it in Arabic because I've forgotten, but it actually goes back much further than the Arabs. It goes back to the 4th century BC. There was a gentleman called Kautilya, who was known as the Indian Machiavelli, and he quoted it in the Sanskrit military book, the Arthashastra. That was the name of the book. However, it goes back even further than that. And I'm going to set the scene for, I think, the first known example of how this operated. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. And there will be a point to all this, believe me. Genesis 13, if you would. Genesis 13, 1. Okay. So Abraham went up from Egypt to the Negev with his wife and everything he had, and Lot went with him. Abraham had become very wealthy in livestock and in silver and gold. From the Negev he went from place to place until he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai where his tent had been earlier, and where he had first built an altar. There Abraham called on the name of the Lord. Now Lot, who was moving about with Abraham, also had flocks and herds and tents. But the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great they were not able to stay together. And quarrelling arose between Abraham's herders and Lot's. The Canaanites and Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. So Abraham said to Lot, "Let's not have any quarrelling between you and me, or between your herders and mine, for we are close relatives. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I will go to the right. If you go to the right, I will go to the left." Lot looked around and saw that the whole plain of the Jordan towards Tsoar was well watered, like the garden of the Lord in the land of Egypt. Well, that's a sermon in itself. I'd love to go into the where Sodom actually was, but I won't, because it's not what this is all about. This is before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out towards the east. The two men parted company. Abraham lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plain, and he pitched his tents near Sodom. Now this is the punchline. Now the people of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. Now you all know this, but it sets the scene for what happened later in chapter 14, verse 1. Genesis 14, verse 1. Now, in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar. Now let's go through these kings slowly. Shinar, as you probably recall, was the plain where they'd been after the flood. They wandered around and they settled in this plain of Shinar, and they built Babylon. So basically, the king of Shinar was the king of Babylon. Okay. Arioch, king of Elasar, which is basically Assyria. So you've got the Babylonians, you've got the Assyrians. Kedalah, or Mer, king of Elam. And if you can think of Iran, that's sort of southwest Iran, if you can think of that, and Tidal, king of Goyim, which basically means king of the nations. Goyim means nations, which I think a lot of that was Turkey, well, referred to as, according to Josephus, was Turkey and further on into Europe. So there are a lot of bunch of people. You've got the people who became the Assyrians, you've got the Babylonians, you've got the Elamites, so basically the Persians, and you've got Turkey. So you've got all that lot, all those kings. Now in verse 2, these kings made war with Bera, king of Sodom, Beersha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Adma, Shemabar, king of Tzavoim, and the king of Bela, that is Zoar, and all these joined forces in the valley of Siddim, that is basically the Dead Sea Valley. 12 years they had served Kedorlaomer, but in the 7th year they rebelled. 13th year they rebelled. Right. So, in the 14th year, Chedorlaomer and the kings who were with him defeated the Rephaim, that's the giants, in Ashtarot Kanaim, the Zuzim in Ham, the Emim in Shaveh Kiryataim, and the Horites in the hill country of Seir, as far as El Paran, on the border of the wilderness. Then they turned back and came to Ein Mishpat, that is Kadesh, and defeated all the country of the Amalekites, and also the Amorites who were dwelling in Hazazon Tamar. A lot of names here. Then the king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah, the king of Admah, the king of Tzavoim, the king of Belas, went out, and they joined battle in the valley of Siddim, with Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, Tidal, king of Goyim, Amraphel, king of Shinar, and Arioch, king of Elasar, the four kings against the five. Now the valley of Siddim was full of bitumen pits, and as the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, some fell into them, and the rest fled to the hill country. So the enemy took all the possessions of Sodom and Gomorrah, and all their provisions, and went their way. And this is the punchline of this one. They also took Lot, the son of Abram's brother, who was dwelling in Sodom, and his possessions, and went their way. So, okay, continuing in verse 13. Then one who had escaped came and told Abram the Hebrew, who was living by the oaks of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol. They were allies of Abram. When Abram heard that his kinsmen had been taken captives, he led forth his trained men born in his house, 318 of them, and went in pursuit as far as Dan. That's right in the north of Israel. And he divided his forces against them by night, he and his servants, and defeated them, and pursued them unto Hobah, north of Damascus. And he brought back all the possessions, and also brought back his kinsman Lot with his possessions, and the women and the people. Okay, so you all know that story. But just think of this. Sodom was a wicked city. All the cities of that plain were wicked. Is it possible that God was using the Babylonians, the Assyrians, and everybody to punish those people? Now, what would have happened if Lot hadn't been around Sodom? Abraham would have sort of looked at what was going on. He'd have said, oh, how sad. And he went on, you know, with doing what he was doing. But he was forced to intervene because Lot was living in Sodom. And he was captured along with all the others. Obviously, Abraham didn't have a choice. God helped him, and 318 men managed to defeat all these kings. But in doing so, he made a lot of enemies which he didn't have before. Abraham and his family came from that area. They came you know, they came from the area of Babylon. They came up. They had no axe to grind against the Assyrians. They had no axe to grind against the Babylonians. They weren't enemies at that stage. But after he had defeated those kings, he had the Assyrians angry. He had the Babylonians angry. He probably had the Elamites angry, and all these other nations. And that was to backfire a bit later on. And then we take the story forward a few centuries. Remember, the people tend to have long memories. And King David was starting to rise up in power. And all the nations in the area, the Ammonites, the Moabites, said, I know what we're going to do. We're going to get this clown once and for all, because before he gets too powerful. So they tricked him into picking a fight with the Moabite, the Ammonites. And what he didn't realize was all the other nations were in as well. But what happened was, instead of David being defeated, David actually, with God's help, he won the battle. So David was in charge of this entire area, and that the Assyrian army had been absolutely flattened. So that was another reason for the Assyrians to be angry at the descendants of Abraham, you know. And during the time that David and Solomon were in control, Assyria was bottom of the heap. But as soon as Israel split into two from north to south, then Israel rose up again. And as all of you know, after a series of invasions, the Assyrians in 721 BC, they carried off all the 10 tribes of Israel into captivity, or at least the ones that were left. A lot of them had already emigrated, but they left. So, now this is where we get to the proverb, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Now, who was it who defeated the Assyrian Empire? Well, it basically came in two waves. I will try and get these dates right. There you go. Yep, in 624 BC, about 100 years later, the northern Scythians, now there were the Israelites, basically the Israelites who were taken into captivity, some went into captivity and they were settled to the east, and some didn't go into captivity, but they settled sort of around the Black Sea into the north, into the north of the Black Sea, which is now basically Crimea, Ukraine, that area. Now, in 624 BC, they all came down into the Middle East, and they took over that part of the empire, what became Israel, Lebanon, Syria, down to Egypt. These Scythians, who were predominantly Israelites, came down and they held the area for about 25 years. And so the Assyrians in that part were defeated. But then about 10 years later, let me get this right. Yeah, about 10 years late, 12 years later, an alliance of the eastern Scythians, i.e. a lot of those were the ones who had already been in captivity and they wanted to get revenge, the eastern Scythians, Israelites, the Babylonians, and the Elamites, they were the ones that three-pronged alliance, they were the ones who took Nineveh and completely flattened the Assyrian Empire. So in that sense, the enemy of my enemy was my friend, you know. But what happened after that? The Babylonians, who are some of the people who were the Babylonians who had helped the Israelites to flatten the Assyrians, they were the ones who who came into Jerusalem in 580 BC, and they destroyed the temple and took the Jewish people into captivity. So the enemy of my enemy is my friend doesn't always work. So, and it often goes pear-shaped. Now, let's come back into more modern times. I mean, for example, in the First World War, I could go back even further actually, in the Napoleonic times, there was Napoleon in Europe, and we were against Napoleon. On our side, we had the Germans, and we had the Russians. And that was more or less the case throughout the 19th century. But then in the 20th century, you had the situation where you had the Russians against the Germans. And that's in the First World War. And the beginning of the Second World War, the Russians and the Germans were on the same side. A lot of people don't know that. The Russian, Hitler and Stalin made a pact together against the Poles. And then, of course, Hitler broke that and he invaded the Soviet Union. So after that, the Russians, all the Soviets, were on our side. So they became our friends. In fact, when Winston Churchill heard that Hitler had attacked Stalin, he said to his personal secretary, "If Hitler invaded hell, I would at least make a favourable reference to the devil in the House of Commons." How would you have said, "If Hitler invaded hell, I would at least make a favourable reference to the devil in the House of Commons"? I think that's the way you would have said it. But so after that, they became our friends. And then, of course, there was the Cold War after that. And because the Russians were then our enemies, and they moved into Afghanistan, we were training these wonderful mujahideen against the Russians. And of course, as soon as the Russians left, these same mujahideen started to attack us. Can you imagine that? And they morphed into people like Al-Qaeda and ISIS and all kinds of people. And then if you sort of think about, well, there's a letter which was written to the Financial Times. And if you can understand one word of this letter, you're better than me. "Sir, Iran is backing Assad. The Gulf states are against Assad. Assad is against Muslim Brotherhood. Muslim Brotherhood and Obama are against General Sisi. But Gulf states are pro-Sisi, which means they are against Muslim Brotherhood. Iran is pro-Hamas, but Hamas is backing Muslim Brotherhood. Obama is backing Muslim Brotherhood, yet Hamas is against the US. Gulf states are pro-US, but Turkey is with the Gulf states against Assad, yet Turkey is pro-Muslim Brotherhood against General Sisi. And General Sisi is being backed by the Gulf states. Welcome to the Middle East and have a nice day." So that was the letter. So all through history, people have made alliances with, you know, if you're fighting this guy and this guy also doesn't like him, he becomes, it's happened all through history. I think we were all children at one stage and we all had to go in the playground. And in the playground there was always a great big bully. There always was. There's always somebody. And if you were smart, you would ally with another bully who was sort of, you know, who was a bit bit more brutal than that one, so you to protect you. And that is the world. You would ally with a bully who would protect you against the other bully who was not going to protect you, who was going to beat you up. And that's the way it's gone. And adulthood is just the same as being children, only you sort of do it different. So I remember when I was about 100 years ago, when I used to live in the old city, this was in the 70s, and I'd sometimes have to go home at 2 in the morning, and quite often it was on my own, and I'd be walking along saying, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil because I'm the biggest, baddest, meanest so-and-so in the entire valley. And that was my attitude at the time. But that is not the way, that's not the way the original goes. I think it's in Psalm 23. Have a look. I'm not quite sure what verse it is, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death.
Did you have a beard in those days?
No, I had a military moustache. King Hussein, I liked, King Hussein was one of my heroes. Even in Israel, they used to refer to him as the plucky little king, and I loved his moustache. I tried to get Heinz Hoffmann to do a moustache like King Hussein, but he didn't quite do it, but you have to have a little bit of a thing in the middle. Anyway, never mind. It's nothing to do with King Hussein. But, right. Yeah. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. And it doesn't go on to say, because I'm the biggest, baddest, meanest something in the valley. It says, because you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And that is the point. In politics, nation statehood, if you like, it's the same. With us, it's the same. People tend to go for strong alliances just to survive. But that's not the way it should be. We should trust God in all our situations. Don't go to the strong man. Don't worry whether it's who's going to be in charge. Go to the strong man. You are with me. Your staff, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And I've mentioned this before about some footage I saw of a mountain lion chasing this, I think it was a baby bear or something. Can't remember. Anyway, it was a great big ferocious mountain lion. He was getting closer and closer to the bear, and he started bashing this little baby bear's nose, and the baby bear started screaming his head off, and the mountain lion started backing away. And then in the background you saw Mammy Bear. And I've mentioned this before, but the point is, we don't see that the great big God is behind us, but our enemy does. So we don't have to rely on all these alliances and being nice to people. Well, be nice by all means, but the point is, we don't have to rely on them, we rely on God. And that's it, basically. I think that's it. So, no, I will pray before we go. Father, it's all very well talking about that, but intellectually we know that you are the greatest. You are the ultimate protection. But do we really know it in our hearts? We ask you to put it in our hearts, till we know that we know that we know that you are our protection. In the name, through your Son, Jesus. Amen.